Yorkshire's late great chat show legend Sir Michael Parkinson will be back interviewing global superstars in a special hometown charity tribute show featuring TV clips hosted by his son Mike. Parky on Parky will celebrate the life and career of the iconic Barnsley broadcaster and national treasure in a fundraiser for the Barnsley Civic at the Town Centre venue on Friday, April the 25th. Tickets are available now at barnsleycivic.co.uk. And to tell us all about it, I'm delighted to say that my special guest today is Mike Parkinson himself. So, Mike, tell us, what can fans expect?
Well, on the 25th of April at the Barnsley Civic, I'm doing a show called Parky on Parky. And this show is a version, it's my version, of the show I used to do with my father a long time, actually, because we used to write a lot of books together and collaborate on projects. And we used to use a show where I was in conversation with him with clips about his from his archive, talking about his life and career. And when he became ill and he was not able to do it anymore, we began to talk about what he would like to happen to his archive and his memory and his legacy, which we'd worked together for 20 odd years to build up. And one of the things he wanted me to do was he wanted me to keep the spirit of the show alive, but he also wanted me to fulfill a promise to the Barnsley Civic, which he made in 2015 when we did the show to promote a book about Muhammad Ali. And he said to them then that he would come back and do the show to purely raise funds for the building. And he never got a chance to do it. So he said, one of the things I have to do is not only keep this show alive, but to also fulfill that promise, which is what I'm doing on the 25th of April. And every single ticket, all the money is going to go to the Barnsley Civic, which is basically the wish fulfillment of my father's wish. And to expect, well, it is a traditional kind of talk show about a person. So you'll learn about his life, you'll learn about his career, you'll see incredible archive from his Parkinson show. But you'll also get a perspective from me as his son and also as his producer and his business partner. And I had a ringside seat with him for 20 odd years, and I learned things about him and made observations about him and had my own thoughts about him, which I'll share. And it'll be a surprise some people about who he really was in private and what he was really like as a man, you know, about how shy he was in many ways, how insecure, how lacking in confidence he often had. And also, I think what people will witness, probably not directly but indirectly, is someone, in a sense, working through their grief. It's inevitable when you lose someone who's such an important influence in your life that if you talk about them, you begin to make connections and remember feelings and emotions as you go along. And that's exactly what happens when I do this show.
Yeah, I mean, we all feel like we've lost somebody by losing them, particularly if you come from Barnsley.
Yes.
He was one of us, wasn't he?
He was.
Is there a sense of this being a little bit of a memorial almost that people can come and be part of? But what a celebration.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're absolutely right. I think that there is a sense of it being a memorial. I think that in August, it'll be 2 years since he died. His memory, his legacy lives on. Obviously, I have a lot to do with that, but that in many ways it has its own momentum. And this really is part and parcel of it. And I think also we're entering a period where we're losing that generation. I mean, I've just spoken, delivered the eulogy at the passing of Laurie Holloway, who used to be my father's band leader, and Dame Edna Everage's band leader as well. And a hugely important man in British music. And he's part of that generation that are disappearing, and these people need to be remembered, not in a nostalgic way necessarily, but because of what they represented and what they gave to the culture. And if you keep that memory alive, you might learn some lessons, not just about the Parkinson show, but about what that generation, where they came from and where that background took them.
The other great thing is that we've got, you know, to keep that memory alive, there's literally, I was going to say hours, but you've probably got weeks and months worth of footage of your dad, which is fantastic. Yeah. We've got the books as well, which is just terrific.
Yeah.
And I've got to mention,
because
I found it fascinating, and I'm a bit of a gadget nut anyway,
the
AI aspect.
Yes. Yes.
So where are we with that? And well, are we going to see Mike back on stage interviewing celebrities of today, a bit ABBA style?
Well, I mean, when he first passed away, it was very clear to me that part of my responsibility was to ensure that his legacy was protected. It's a terrible word, legacy, but you kind of know what I mean. And one of the ways of protecting it was to embrace the new technology, because, you know, if you don't embrace it, someone else will get in charge of it. And one of the things I wanted to do was to explore AI. So I went to a very young, thrusting company with some very bright people and one of the guys who founded the company that I'm working with actually is at the forefront of writing all the policy documents about AI in the media. So I knew I was in the right business. They took it one step further. I just wanted to see if we could create a kind of a very accurate representation of my father's voice for use in what you've just said, you know, maybe reading his books or maybe narrating something. But they said, no, I think we can create an AI iteration of him as an interviewer. So that's what we've done. I mean, we've gone and allowed this AI iteration to work. It's only allowed to base anything it does upon stuff that I actually own the rights to. So it's all done in an ethical way. And what it is it's a program which uses my father's voice, which has learnt, in inverted commas, how to interview by looking at hours of partisan interviews. And then we've put it opposite humans. And we've done 8 podcasts so far, ranging from pop stars through to comedians by way of sports stars. And it's been absolutely fascinating. And what it isn't my father. It could never be my father. It doesn't have a conscience. It has no ego. It doesn't have sons. It doesn't have a daughter. It doesn't have a wife. It doesn't have any agenda. But what it has is my father's voice, is interviewing sensibilities, and it has that very weird thing that AI does have, which is total focus upon what you're saying. It's only interested in what a person in front of him is saying, and it throws up extraordinary moments. It really does. It isn't anywhere near what you're talking about yet. The technology is developing all the time. And that next step of creating him as an AI avatar, that's a very big step.
Well, you say that. I did a fascinating interview with an Holocaust survivor who's been dead for about, I don't know, 10 years now. And they were dead when I did the interview.
Yeah,
But he was sat in front of me in a chair.
Yeah.
I think he'd done hours worth of video. And so when I asked a question, he answered me.
Yeah.
And it might have been more like a video call, but it was like I was sat in front of a real person. And I know some people might think it's weird, but I think to be able to go see something on stage that you can't anymore, for instance, like Elvis or Frank Sinatra.
Yes.
And I mean, ABBA are already doing it, and they're still with us. Do you think we could get to something like that?
We can do, and I don't think we should be resistant to it. I think we just need to understand that it is there, it is coming, it will happen. We have to do it ethically. We've got to do it sensibly. We've got to do it sensitively as well. And I think that's what the challenge is that, you know, when someone hears the word AI, they think that I'm creating some kind of Frankenstein creation of my father that roams around independently. It doesn't at all. It's all it is it's a very clever piece of software which uses my father's voice, which uses my father's interview archive to give a kind of approximation of being interviewed by him. The possibilities are endless. The possibilities are extraordinary. I mean, you know, there was one person who did it, a man called Joe Tracini. He's Joe Pasquale's son. He's got borderline personality disorder. He's a wonderful man in many ways. He struggles so badly with this condition, and he talks very openly about it. He came on the show, and the amazing effect that it had of him just talking to a voice he recognized, a voice he trusted, but a voice that didn't have any agenda, that he was able to be completely open, and it wasn't making a judgment. And it suddenly opened up with him a completely different possibility. And then you begin to think, well, what are the applications going forward? What are the applications for people with conditions? What are the applications for people who are struggling with grief, for instance? or people who are struggling with isolation, with loneliness.
It's certainly got a longer life.
It's got a longer life, and it's got something that we mustn't necessarily shy away from.
But what we can be certain of is that your dad will be back with us.
He will.
At the Civic. He's going to be here. He's going to be on the screen, and he's going to be with some of the biggest names on the planet.
Absolutely. Totally.
In terms of, you know, we all have a feeling about your dad. He was a national treasure. Mm. We all, like us, have felt like we lost somebody close to us. Mm. You did lose somebody close to you. What's your greatest memories of your dad off screen?
Mm. My greatest memories of my dad off screen was the loves that he gave me, which was for reading, for literature. He was always encouraging me to read, and also the music he introduced me to. It was music that filtered through to me as a child. I mean, I was interested in the Hit Parade, but he always played that beautiful music that he always celebrated. And it's interesting how it's just become, it's percolated into my mind, and it's become a soundtrack for my own life, it is for him. And if ever I remember him, I always think of a piece of music and a book I'm reading. The other thing I remember about him was, you know, as much as he was very much a man of his time, he was like a father of his time. He was a bit like, not do as I do, do as I say, not as I do. There was a time definitely where, you know, as growing up, he wasn't as present as he could have been, but that's because a generational thing. But I think it was because when he was there, he was so valuable because he was so wise. And it wasn't just me who felt that. I found later on that people talking to other people who knew him as friends, they said the one thing they miss about him is his wise counsel. And he did have extraordinary capacity. It's what he had when he was an interviewer. He listened intently to what you had, what you told him, and he thought very much about it. And what he said, and when he said it, it really meant something. And that's what I really miss, and I still miss it now. If ever I'm, you know, if ever I'm faced with a dilemma, be it personal or professional or whatever, I always think, I wonder what my father would say. And I do miss him for that.
Is that what you miss most?
Mostly, yeah, I do. I miss that. I feel very vulnerable almost without it, because you suddenly realise how an important protective factor that was. You always had that other barrier. Suddenly you have to make that decision without that check.
How will it feel when you're on stage without him?
I've done this show now two or three times. I have to say, on one level, it's very freeing, because when you are the son of someone who is so beloved in the public name, you have to play a role, particularly if you work with him. So you have to make sure that you don't try to implant yourself too strongly upon him, because people want to see him. They want to hear him. And there were times when we used to do the show where I kind of thought, I'd love to ask him more about that. I'd love to explore that more. But I thought, I won't, because that's implanting myself into the show. What I'm allowed to do now, I think, is properly celebrate the man, properly celebrate him, and show to people that what you saw on the screen was not just produced in a box and delivered to the BBC. It had a long birth, it had a long development, and it came as much from himself as it did from the community he was born in, community he was brought up in, the one that you know, the one that you lived in, and the one that he did as well. And that's what I kind of want to bring to it. There are times when I'm on stage where I talk about him and I suddenly feel his absence. And it's not when I see the archive, it's when I talk about him. That's the interesting thing. As I said to you, I said to you just a minute ago, it is an element where I'm working through grief whilst doing it.
Do you get a little emotional?
I do. Yeah, you cannot get a little emotional. When you talk about, I mean, even simple things, with the tenses that you use, if you say, I worked, or I sometimes will say, I worked with my father, and I think, well, I don't work with my father, I worked with my father. So when you have to actually make that tense change, you suddenly are brought up very sharply. But, you know, I think that people have to, I mean, you know, it's something that I've always felt as well since I left, is that he's not really gone, is he? Because in a sense, he's in me. He's 50% of me. So when I'm standing on stage, he is still there. you might not recognise him.
I must admit, when I first bumped into you again today, your profile, suddenly I thought, oh, it's mine.
Yeah, well, I think that that's what happens. I think every son grows into his father with a personality. Well, I think one thing I've never really worried about, I think, well, going back, I think my father got better as he got older. And he got better in everything as he got older. He got more relaxed in himself, more happy with himself, a better interviewer, a better everything. And I just hope that happens to me.
Excellent. Just finally, Mike. Obviously, we've explored about the sense of losing him, but we've got him, and he's had a lot to say in the past, and he did used to change his mind a little bit. But I must ask you, you must know him better than anybody else. If he were to have his three guests in a musical act and bring his show back for one more night, who would those personalities be and why?
Well, you see, I would like to the idea that, going back to what you said, I would like the idea that if we are now existing in the world of artificial intelligence, I would like to think the idea that we could probably create an absolutely dream talk show. So I think he would definitely have Frank Sinatra as a musical guest. He would have Humphrey Bogart, 100% he'd had Humphrey Bogart. He would have, I'll probably have Raquel Welch back as she was when he interviewed him in 1975, because she was extraordinary. But I think he would definitely still have Billy Connolly. And because he is the thing about Billy that Dad was just in awe of, and people forget, is that he was a stand-up comedian. Stand-up comedians hate doing talk shows because they've got about half an hour of material. They do 15 minutes. That's 15 minutes that's gone. Billy did the show 19 times. He never once had to dip into his own material. And he did every single show he did was different. And my father was just in total awe of him. And the one thing he absolutely loved about interviewing was people that made him laugh.
There you go. Mike, listen, always a pleasure to speak to you. Please keep Sir Michael's legacy alive. I'm sure you will. It's in great hands. And we'll look forward to seeing you back in Barnsley and throughout the country. Thanks.
Thank you. Thank you, Graham. Thank you.